You know, what we want to do is we want to be good stewards of the information that we're given. And sometimes I'm really, really good at learning things the easy way. But sometimes I'm really even better at learning the hard way. God knows exactly what He's doing. When He gives you challenges in your life, it's really an opportunity to learn. It's an opportunity to grow. So do you need to suffer forever, or can we learn some lessons on what can we do to help improve ourselves? One of the greatest gifts that we are given as human beings is our health. Not everybody has the same rich genetic experience where they have super genes and they can do whatever they want and still be greatly have an impressive level of health. The rest of us, which is probably like 99.5% of the population, you got to work at it. And as you get older, it becomes more challenging and more difficult. So if you don't have a plan to take care of yourself, what are you going to do when a crisis occurs? I know you hear these stories all the time, but people get sick, an infection takes over an organ in the body, and one example I'll give you is just pneumonia. What do you do when your lungs fill up with fluid and they can't drain? Well, all that thick, mucousy gunk in your lungs is going to be like a festering cesspool of infection and inflammation that is going to destroy you. If you cannot get oxygen into your cells, you're going to leave this earth. You will no longer walk it. And so one of the things that I just see over and over again is the way that we treat infections. I want to read a story to you because I want to question this. Just about everyone listening knows that there are some bacteria, they have figured out how to live and how to get around antibiotics. And there's going to be some people, they may have a very unusual circumstance where they get an infection they never anticipated or they never expected it. I think I told you the story about the two brothers that were in West Texas. And I can't remember their name, but I read their book when I was real young. I might have been like 13. It was one of those Field and Stream or Sports of Field hunting articles in the magazine. I always love reading those. But one of the brothers, he kind of used the palm of his hand as he kind of pressed his lips against it, and he could make kind of a squealing sound trying to imitate a dying rabbit. And he was sitting on a rock in the dark. And from behind the rock, a gray fox pounced on his wrist and bit him. And so he was startled. I guess the fox thought he was biting into a rat or a rabbit that was dying, something like that. But the brother said, ouch. Anyway, he had this small red spot where the fox broke the skin. And he said for the next month, the red spot would just fester and ooze. It would never go away. You and I would call that drainage. That's one of the keys to getting over infection. Your body's got to be able to wash it clean and get it out. And so if you have a wound to the surface that's oozing and draining, you can bet your bottom dollar there's something under the skin that's left behind. And your body's trying to wash that stuff out. Does that make sense? Okay. He said after about a month and a half of the wound and the oozing not going away, he took his small old-timer or charade pocket knife and he pulled open that third blade, which is like a tiny pen knife blade, and he said he dug out a small chip of a canine tooth that evidently the fox left behind, and all of a sudden it clears up and heals. And so this is what's the lesson that we learn? Well, one lesson is, if you have something on your hand and it won't go away, maybe there's a splinter in there. Not everybody's going to get bit by a fox. I get that. I don't want to be bitten by a fox. Or that bobcat that I saw the other day. I don't want to get its teeth or claws in me. Anyway, I want to read this story to you. And what I want you to think about is I want you to think about the immune system that God has created and it doing its job the way it's supposed to. And we have to do our job. You got to make it easy for your body to heal and repair itself. But you know that pharmaceutical companies, they are completely running out of strategies for treating wounds that won't heal or infections that won't go away. It's just getting almost borderline horrific. In the year 20,000, excuse me, in the year 2008, there's no, we haven't gotten to the year 20,000 yet. I'm sorry, I jumped the gun by only 18,000 years, almost. In the year 2008, Dr. Kenneth Todar, who's a bacteriologist, that means his expertise is revolving around the life cycle of a bacteria and what they do to human tissues when they take hold and cause infection. So back in 2008, Dr. Kenneth Todar, a bacteriologist, he helped identify the enormity of this growing problem of having bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics. And I'm going to quote him. He says, nowadays, about 70% of the bacteria that cause infections in hospitals, they're resistant to at least one of the drugs most commonly used for the treatment. Some organisms are resistant to all approved antibiotics and can only be treated with experimental and potentially toxic drugs. Okay, at least that's their perspective. So what happens in a traditional medical environment when a patient develops a raging antibiotic-resistant infection? Well, the answer is going to depend on where the infection is. If it's an organ, you know, barring a miracle from God, the patient's going to die if there's nothing you can give the patient to kill the infection. But if the uncontrollable infection is isolated in a limb, say a finger, well, there's a more effective therapy. It's called amputation. In most, if not all, cases, this is unnecessary. The late Maureen Kennedy Solomon, president of the National Health Federation, tells of a frightening experience with her husband, Frank. And actually, this is a good story right here. During an attempt to bathe Sam, their pet cat, that's a good name for a cat, isn't it, Sam? The feline became more than excited at the sound and the feel of a hairdryer. That's nuts, a hairdryer, right? If I was a cat, I don't think I'd like that either. Sam bit into the bone of her husband's right index finger. I imagine that cat latched on for dear life, saying, "If you put that blow dryer near me one more time, there's going to be another one." Okay, the emergency room doctor checked the bite on Frank's index finger. He gave the gentleman a tetanus shot, and then he prescribed Frank an antibiotic. During the next 4 days, Frank's right hand swelled to twice its normal size. Hey, folks, I don't want this to happen to you, but I need you to remember this story in case something like this happens to you or somebody you love. So his hand swelled to twice its normal size. It became discolored, and it caused him intolerable pain that medication could not quell. You need to remember that also. If you have pain in your body that won't go away, let's start thinking about what could be behind that. Maybe it's just different than a lack of morphine, okay? Doctors at the emergency hospital were unanimous in their diagnosis. He had a condition called osteomyelitis, and I'm telling you, that's bad, folks. That means you probably have a staph infection of the bone. I remember years ago, a buddy of mine, all of a sudden his knee began to swell up. I said, "Oh my goodness, you've got osteomyelitis." I sent him to the hospital. I think the doctor said if we'd waited, maybe it was 4 hours, the bone would have been eaten by the raging staph infection out of control. So I'm going to quote the wife now. The wife of Frank, he got bit by the cat named Sam. This is what she's saying. The bacteria had eaten away the bone, the joint, and the knuckle, and it continued to travel down the hand. That means it wasn't stopping. The laboratories were unable to identify the bacteria. And here's another note. Even if you have a culture done and they cannot identify it, that does not mean you do not have an infection. Does that make sense? So the grimace-faced doctors told me it would probably cost Frank his hand. And you know what that means? Surgical amputation. They also said that at the rate this infection's going, it's probably going to take his life. That can't be encouraging for a wife to hear about her husband. He was put on intravenous antibiotics around the clock. His hand was slashed open across the palm and down both sides of the finger to the bone, and it was washed every 2 hours in an attempt to stop the raging infection. They also slash those open so it can drain. Okay? I went before the hospital board to try to get them to administer vitamin C. I wanted them to give my husband vitamin C intravenously. I was told that they were sure it was a good treatment, but they knew nothing about it, and they did not allow treatments of which they had no knowledge. So here's the rest of the story. After 5 weeks of this ineffective therapy, you know, the intravenous antibiotics around the clock, the Solomons were told there was only one way to save Frank's life. They're going to have to amputate his arm. Through consultation with Dr. Robert Cathcart, M.D., now Dr. Cathcart, if you've ever heard that name before, he is considered a legitimate vitamin C expert. That means he knows it going forwards and backwards and inside out. So after they talked to Dr. Robert Cathcart, M.D., a vitamin C expert, they decided to leave the hospital and treat the infection with high-dose vitamin C. Okay? Well, what do you do if the treatments are not working? You ask a question. Is there anything else? And this is what they came up with. Doctors inside and outside the hospital counseled them that their decision would probably cost Frank his life. Nevertheless, in anticipation of things continuing to worsen, the surgical appointment for amputation was allowed to stand. Okay? The Solomons drove from the hospital directly to a local clinic that routinely administered high-dose vitamin C. Immediately, the doctor started an intravenous infusion of vitamin C, giving Frank 60 to 75 grams per day via this route. I'm thinking some days 60 and other days 75. Now get this, Frank also started taking 30 grams of oral vitamin C per day, and he started packing the infected hand with a poultice made of garlic and red clay on his right hand each night. So you get the picture here. At bedtime, when it was time to go to sleep, he would pack it in clay and garlic. You know what he's doing here? He is trying to draw the infection out. That's called drainage. That's what you want to do. Now listen to this. Within two treatments, we're talking about the intravenous vitamin C, the pain, which had been requiring two codeine tablets every 4 hours, it stopped. Okay? After 9 days of treatment, the infection and the swelling were totally gone. Now there's a miracle right there. So if you have a family member that has all this swelling and all this fluid building up, you need to pay attention to this, okay? The deep open wounds from the surgery had healed with only hairline scars left as a reminder. Now that is incredible. You talk about tremendous healing. Again, in Maureen Solomon's words, and I'm going to quote her, Frank kept his appointment with the planned amputation. With a broad smile, he held out a no longer misshapen or discolored right hand to shake the hand of the very shaken surgeon. I like the way they worded this. And the surgeon said he'd never seen this ever happen before. One in a million, he said. As I watched their shocked faces, a scripture verse came to my mind. God has chosen the simple things of the world to confound the wise. All right, if you want to join me on the radio, I just missed a phone call. You can call me right now. The number is 903-586-5257. So what does the body need when you have an infection? Well, one of the things it's got to have is vitamin C. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Yes, Dr. Morgan, I've just been diagnosed with an acoustic neuroma. And they said it is 1.6 centimeters. I have lost some hearing in that right ear, and I have the roaring or the tinnitus in that ear. Is there anything that you would recommend to do to help that?
Have you been taking any pharmaceutical drugs prior to this development?
No, I don't take anything.
Okay, so as far as you know, you don't really have any health conditions. Your kidneys are great. You don't have diabetes. There's no heart disease. The other thing that I always see is there's some toxicity. So you would have told me if you'd been treated for a disease with chemotherapy or something, right?
Yes. No, I have not been treated. I thought I had wax in my ear. And when I went, they said there was no wax. And so they sent me to get an MRI. And that's when this acoustic neuroma showed up. Now, the doctor, I went to the doctor in Dallas, he said that we should watch it. We should take another MRI in 6 months and see if it's growing, that maybe I'd had it for a long time and it just now had started causing a problem.
Do you like that plan?
That's what I was thinking. I mean, I'm not ready to rush in and do surgery or anything like that, but I just wondered. I was reading and there were certain vitamins online.
Right.
Loma and B12 that they recommended.
Oh, man, you just totally beat me to the punch. You're a genius. No, and let me just say it this way right here. I'm not trying to be negative. I don't want to complain. I just absolutely hate the idea when there's something that we should run toward and try to improve and correct and heal and rejuvenate. Well, I don't want to watch and wait. I want to take action.
Right.
It's kind of like when you read the New Testament, the word belief is a verb. That means you got to take action, right?
Right.
And so why don't we just talk about those things just for a brief moment, but let me kind of give you the breakdown in my mind.
Okay.
If a person had any type of swelling, and what I'm referring to is a benign tumor, I'm not talking about something malignant that's cancerous that's going to spread from this location to a different organ and take over the entire body, but I am talking about the word tumor, which means a swelling or a growth.
Yes.
And yes, while it may be benign, I want to look at the factors. And so you've probably heard me say with tumors in the past, if you want a tumor to grow, give it as much sugar as possible. You're going to generate so much neurological inflammation that it's just going to make it more likely that it's going to grow and take over.
Right.
But the doctor's right. They have no way of knowing how long it's been there. But what I would say is, and I hope I'm not putting the end first, but let me do it this way. What if the roaring sound went away? And what if the tinnitus went away? And what if your symptoms went away? Wouldn't that give you confidence that you're moving in the right direction?
Absolutely.
Okay, so some of what I'm thinking of may be kind of radical, but let me talk about the non-radical stuff first, okay?
Okay.
All right. Any time that you can reduce inflammation in the human body, it's almost always a win. And so I have the article. I don't know where it is. I had it this morning. I've already lost it. Isn't that horrible? But it's talking about one thing. In women, one of the most important markers you can look at to see if the conditions are ripe for inflammation, there's like three or four of them. A doctor can do a simple blood test where he can look at what's called sedimentation rate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so on a woman, if the sedimentation rate on the blood test comes back 0 millimeters, that's usually a pretty good sign that you don't have excessive inflammation. And then the other one they look at, and I think there's two of them, they either do the one called C-reactive protein. Sometimes that's just a CRP on a lab test. Or the other one they'll do is HS. That stands for high sensitivity C-reactive protein. And so when those are 0, you're thinking, oh my goodness, this is great. There's like no inflammation. I love it. This is awesome. The other one that you look at is a substance called uric acid. I know because I read this the other day because I'm kind of doing my own research on the topic, trying to get an answer to a question I have. But when uric acid is above 3.5, you start seeing things develop in the human body. And so for a woman, if her uric acid is 5 or above, then the conditions are right for probably tumors and inflammation and heart disease and arterial damage to form. And that's kind of what I'm after right here. And so if your uric acid were lower, then the inflammation would be lower. So enter a small little fruit or a berry that God himself has designed. It's called the cherry.
Yes.
And so in this one study, women ate 45 cherries a day. And I'm just going to tell you, in my opinion, getting frozen cherries that have already been pitted and washed, that's probably the easiest way you're ever going to get them. It's like no work is involved except bending over, grabbing the bag of cherries and putting them in the shopping cart or opening them in your freezer. So when women did this, they noticed that all these markers of inflammation began to diminish and go away. Now, going back to what you said a while ago, oh my goodness, we could just spend the whole program talking about B12. B12 is so critical when it comes to healing neurological tissue. And so if there's like an acoustic neuroma, that's neurological tissue.
Right.
And so B12 is really, really a key deal here. And so what destroys B12 the most? Well, the more sugar a person eats, the lower their B12 levels are going to be. But without adequate B12, there will be no rejuvenation of neurological tissue. And so if you went to a doctor and the doctor said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to run a vitamin B12 test. I would say if your vitamin B12 levels come back below 850, it's going to be nearly impossible to rejuvenate. And when I say rejuvenation, I'm just talking about the idea tissues healing faster than they're breaking down or becoming damaged. You kind of get that, don't you?
Yes.
And so there's almost no way that you can overdose on B12 that I'm aware of. I've never heard of anybody having an injury to their body by getting B12. It's just, I hear doctors all the time tell people to quit taking it. I don't really think that's exactly correct. That's just my opinion on the matter. But usually B12 is so critical when you have an issue anywhere along the nervous system, the brain, the spinal cord, spinal nerves. Do you know how much real estate in the brain is devoted to the sense of sight? It's huge. How about hearing? Huge also.
Right.
And so giving your body B12 is one of the best things you can do. So you can take it supplementally. And one of the easiest forms is called methylcobalamin. You can get that in a sublingual form, and you can suck on those little B12 tablets under your tongue, and that way you bypass your digestive tract, or at least part of it, and you get it directly into the sublingual artery and vein, thus carrying it straight to the brain.
And can I get that like at the granary at a health food store?
Absolutely, yes. Okay. Run by the granary and just say, I need some sublingual B12. Now, the discipline issue is this. You've got to discipline yourself not to eat them like they're sweet tarts. Even though they're black cherry flavor, that's the best one. But if you can just suck on them and let them slowly dissolve into nothingness under your tongue, that's what's going to give you the biggest bang for the buck.
Okay.
The next thing is this. The food that has by far and away the most B12, usually people are repulsed by this when I tell them, but I'll tell you anyway, it's beef liver.
Okay, I can do that.
And plus, let me tell you the other thing, and I know I'm trying hard not to get sidetracked. That's just always because I can't multitask. I can do one thing at a time. what they've noticed since the 1920s and 30s, anytime that there's a ringing of the ear or a hearing problem, or there's a growth in the ear, you start thinking about what's called vitamin A. And without going into just all the research, because I don't have it in front of me, vitamin A is what they used to give people for severe tinnitus, and a lot of them were cured. I did not say all of them, because we're human beings. Everybody's got like a different, you know how you go into public and everybody has their own strength and they have their own weakness.
Yes.
Well, you don't really have to play to their strengths so much, but what you're doing as a physician is you're trying to find out where's the problem coming from and where's the weakness. But you're not going to find a better source of vitamin A and B12 than eating beef liver once a week.
Okay.
You don't have to eat it every day. I mean, unless your husband wants to go out in the pasture and slaughter a fattened calf and give it to you fresh, then that's fine. The other thing that I would do if it were me, there is a substance in nature it's a flavonoid compound called resveratrol. Have you ever heard of that before?
I have, yes.
For example, it's found in the skins of blueberries, and so when you have blueberries, what is the very substance that prevents blueberries from getting eaten? by mold and mildew and fungus. Well, resveratrol is what protects the blueberry from that. It's also found in grape skins. So when they make wine and you drink like a dark red wine, what you're doing is you're getting more resveratrol, but you can take it in supplement form. And the best form to take is probably called the trans form of resveratrol, but you can get that from a plant called the Japanese knotweed.
Okay.
And one of the reasons why I like that, it's one of the best antioxidants that you can put to the human body. And another way of saying this is anytime that the tissues in the body break down faster than what you can repair, then the disease just kind of goes on and there's nothing to stop it or to abate it.
Right.
But resveratrol, that definitely increases blood flow and circulation and a greater antioxidant capacity to your ear. Now, the other thing that I always think about is just cod liver oil. Just about everything I've told you is probably a superfood. B12, it's one of the greatest vitamins of all time. I've seen people's lives turned around just by getting injections of B12 when they had a serious problem.
Right.
Or a doctor in a hospital giving an IV. But I would look at some of those markers, and
yes.
I think we can figure this out. But when you consume cod liver oil, I mean, the choice is completely yours.
Right.
But what you want is, this is pure food and nutrition, and they're called essential fatty acids because you can't really make them. You got to get them from the food that you eat. That's one of the reasons why eating fish and salmon is just so good for a human being, especially a woman. They do so much better. But cod liver oil, that is a super food that is so good for damaged neurological tissue.
And can you take that just as a supplement?
Absolutely, yeah. In your situation, I would venture a guess. It's really essential that you take some cod liver oil supplementally, because the chances are your husband's not going to go to the Arctic Ocean today and get some cod for you, is he?
No.
Does he have a kayak?
No, he doesn't.
Well, he's not even prepared then. Way to go. No, but so, yeah, you're looking supplementally to take these things because they have a very specific neurological action. The other thing that you might think of, there's an herb called ginkgo biloba.
Yeah.
It is very, very interesting. And then, of course, what you want is you want something that stimulates the growth of new cells in the brain. And one of the mushrooms is called lion's mane. You ever heard of lion's mane before?
No, I haven't.
Well, when you're in the woods and you see something that's white, it looks like the mane of a lion, you can just pop it in your mouth. Or it could be the death cap mushroom, which could kill you. Wait, don't do that. No, but if you were to buy my lion's mane, that is more specific to inflamed, injured neurological tissues. And so you're just trying to make it easy to take these natural compounds that God has made to help repair that. Now, I'm going to say this, but I'm just going to say it by quoting the New England Journal of Medicine. I don't have the article in front of me. But they were looking at the studies on the use of cannabis, which that's marijuana, and they were using it to shrink tumors in the brain. Now, I try to ask every single human being that walks in my door that has tumors in their brain, what is doing the best? Is it the chemotherapy? Is it the radiation? Is it the surgery? Is it the drugs? Is it the immunotherapy? And they all say the same thing to me. They say the biggest bang for the buck would be the use of cannabis. I'm not recommending that. I'm just telling you what they're telling me.
Right.
But it has a very precise action upon inflamed or weakened or damaged tumorous neurological tissue. So I'm just throwing that out there. I'm not telling you what to do. And I realize that could be a very, very offensive conversation. I am not trying to offend you or anybody else. That's not my goal here.
Sure.
But I have seen men before that had tumors without number in their brain to have all the tumors just completely disappear. And that's what they use. They use that as a medicine, not for the purpose of abusing it or getting high.
Right.
And this is no justification, but you know as well as I do, you could abuse anything, can't you?
Sure, sure.
If you told me that you wanted to drink 4 ounces of red wine once a week, I'm not getting bent out of shape over that.
Right.
But what if you had 3 bottles a night? Well, you're asking for, death. Your liver and pancreas will just die or explode.
Right.
And so those are some of the things that I would look at right there. And then walking every single day. If it were me, I'd put castor oil in my ear every night at bedtime.
Really?
I would. Castor oil is amazing. Yeah, absolutely. Just put two or three drops, you know, lay on your side. Is it your left ear?
It's my right ear.
Well, I didn't ask. I knew I had a 50-50 chance of guessing it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, wow, look how smart I am. I guessed which ear it was. No, I'm joking. But what you would do is lay on your left side and then put a few drops. And, you know, the other thing that's not going to hurt you to do, you could get a product called ear oil.
Yes.
And that contains one of the herbs in there is hypericum. And hypericum, which is one of the plants that they make the ear oil out of, it has a neurological benefit. And it may even be that if you took the homeopathic remedy called hypericum, that may be very beneficial to you.
Yes.
But with tumors, I try to tell everybody, cut out the sugar.
Right, right. Well, I've listened to you for a long time, so that was when they told me Tuesday, that was it. That's what I decided, no more sugar. I knew that would be one of your recommendations.
Well, it really is. If you eat so much sugar and it generates so much inflammation in the brain, you're not going to believe this, but I read a study before I went on the radio. And they tried giving sugar to kids to see if it causes hyperactivity.
Yeah.
What would you guess the study said?
It did.
No, it didn't say that at all. That
really?
Said all their extensive tests and all the sugar they gave the kids, they really couldn't tell what was happening and what was going on. They couldn't conclusively determine it. But in the real world, what do you do? You walk up to a well-behaved child in church service right before the sermon starts or the worship service starts, and somebody hands the kids three strawberry Starburst fruit chews. Well, what's going to happen to those kids in 10 minutes? They're going to be going bonkers.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't really, the study said it didn't affect them at all. Come on.
Yeah, that doesn't take rocket science.
No, hey, you know what? You can make a YouTube video tomorrow at church service. You give a kid five Starbursts and see what happens 10 minutes into the sermon.
Exactly.
I think I know who's going to be crying and going out for a... Never mind.
Right.
It doesn't do... And think of it is, my point that I'm trying to make is, sugar is so hard on the brain, but we're so wired for it.
Yeah.
But sugar's supposed to be that thing that we just get sparingly. So I'm not even worried about the sugar that you would get from eating cherries. I am not.
Right.
And cherries, they're so good at ridding the body of inflammation. So if you need something that's sweet, why not eat a bowl of cherries?
Exactly. Or blueberries, right?
That's right. You sure can. And at least the benefit is, you know, one of the studies that I read about 10 years ago, they showed that a cup of blueberries a day... I know that's a lot, but it drastically improved the performance of your stem cells. These are the cells in your bone marrow that manufacture all the white blood cells and red blood cells and blood components.
Right.
But that's another way of saying it is, that's healing, baby. Healing, healing, healing.
Exactly.
And so I think that you have a good start.
And
I hope I haven't said anything to offend you, but I retract nothing I said.
Dr. Morgan, thank you so
much. You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for your phone call. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, that means another phone line the phone is officially open if you want to call. 903-586-5257. It's no big mystery. I do not like the idea of watching and waiting. Never have, never will. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Morgan. I was wanting to know, what could you recommend for overactive bladder?
Do you consume stevia by chance?
No, I don't.
Okay. If somebody consumes stevia, it's going to have a high concentration of what's called calcium oxalate or oxalic acid. And when you consume something with high that's in oxalic acid, it makes you go to the bathroom all the time. So since you're not consuming that, let me tell you the three foods that have a high amount of the oxalate or oxalic acid that might make you want to urinate all the time. It's called white potatoes, spinach, and nuts.
Oh, wow.
But none of that applies to you. You don't eat pistachios every day, do you?
No, but I had white potatoes yesterday in the soup.
How often do you have spinach?
Oh, maybe once or twice a week.
Okay. Well, that's usually what I think of. And have you been for lab tests lately where they measured the function of your kidneys or did a urinalysis to measure your bladder?
No.
A low-grade urinary tract infection could make you want to urinate all the time. Now, if a woman experiences what's called urinary leakage, that's where she just loses tone of that urinary sphincter muscle that's supposed to hold the urine in the bladder. That's mm-hmm. usually related to vitamin D3 or to vitamin B12. Now, I don't know if you've seen my skin color, but it's pretty doggone white. I'm not exactly sunbathing every day. But because I have whiter skin or lighter skin, when I go out in the sunlight, it's very easy for the rays of the sun to penetrate my skin and start the process of manufacturing vitamin D3. And so in a woman that has darker skin, it's mm-hmm. much more challenging, which means she has to either spend quite a bit more time outdoors or she has to supplement with what's called vitamin D3.
Oh, I see.
And so if you have, go backwards and tell me, is it just urinary frequency? Is that the big problem?
Yes.
Now, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Does that mean you just have to go to the bathroom over and over and over again?
Yes, mostly during the night.
Okay. If it's during the night, there's two or three things that we could do to try to remedy that. Number one, you could try taking minerals just before bedtime. And I realize this may be a slight diversion or side topic. When you drink a glass of water, water didn't just come in the body and say, hey, yippee, now that I'm here, I'll do whatever I want. I'm going to go down to the big toe and hang out. Nope, it doesn't do that. Water is always under the authority of electrolytes and your kidneys. They tell water what to do. They don't say, you're not bossing me around. I'm telling you what to do, and I need you to take your rightful place inside of this kidney cell. But if you're low in electrolytes, the water's just going to go right through you. This is where you could drink a glass of water, and you're going, oh, my goodness. It's like 20 minutes later, I'm running to the bathroom. It's completely going through me. So that's more of a mineral deficiency. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Some people, I can just give them cherries after their evening meal, and others I would tell to have like a small handful of raisins. And yes, I know that raisins have sugar in them, but what I'm going to suggest is they have a very therapeutic benefit on the frequent urination by helping. I mean, a lot of the people that I see, the quickest way to get them rehydrated is just to take like a gallon of water and put a little bit of frozen grape juice concentrate, you know, the frozen stuff.
Yeah.
And give them a teaspoon of like Celtic or Himalayan salt and the juice of a lime or a lemon or two and the gallon of water. And if they sip on that throughout the day, you can rehydrate them. But if a person just drinks water and it shoots right through them and all of a sudden they're running to the bathroom, then you have to start thinking about a mineral deficiency.
Gotcha.
And so we're talking about alkaline ash minerals.
Alkaline ash minerals.
Yeah, when they burn in a fire, they turn alkaline. And so, like, if you had pure sugar, that would be an acid food. If you had a Coca-Cola in front of you, that'd be a high-acid food.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what the other study I read this morning was? I'm just laughing at it to myself because I'm going, don't people know this? Because I'm reminding myself, too. But they're saying that when you drink a beverage that's filled with high-fructose corn syrup, your body can't determine when it's satisfied, or you don't get those release of hormones that tell you, oh my goodness, your stomach's full, don't eat anymore. But when you drink sugary beverages, including fruit juice, your body says, we can't tell that we're actually full, so just keep eating, eating, eating. The other study that I looked at, I just was shocked by it. It said when parents give one 12-ounce glass of fruit juice to their children every day, they're a lot shorter than if they never had fruit juice. Now, what does that tell you? That is no bueno. Do you speak Spanish fluently?
No.
Well, you know what no bueno means?
No.
That means no good. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to be funny here. And so fruit juice for kids, that is no bueno. That is no good if you want them to be tall. I'm sorry. Let me start over. if you want the child to reach their full God-given potential.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, if the child is if the mother's 4 foot tall and the dad's 4 foot tall, there's a pretty good chance the kid's going to be pretty close to 4 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a man that's 6 foot tall and the wife is 5'8", well, there's a pretty good indication that the sons or the daughters are going to be a little bit taller than the mama.
Mm-hmm.
But if you give them sugar, that has been shown to greatly diminish their full potential on height.
Okay.
So the more sugar that someone consumes, the more they're going to urinate because your body's trying to flush out the acid. And that is one of the jobs of the kidneys, is to help maintain the proper pH of the body. So when I said alkaline ash minerals, well, one of the jobs of the kidneys is to help gently alkalize the blood. So when your blood has an alkaline pH, that's when things are pretty good. But almost all the diseases take place in the presence of high acid.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where sugar comes in. That's an acid food.
Mm-hmm. So how do I get hold of this alkaline ash minerals?
Well, that's going to be stuff like magnesium and potassium. If you had just one salad a day for the next week, you would start to alkalize your body. Now, I know this sounds weird, but limes and lemons, they do contain a substance called citric acid. It's just naturally occurring. But when you squeeze a lime on your taco, or you squeeze lime in your water or lemon in your water, what are you doing? You're helping to gently alkalize your body. And plus, lemons, they have such an interesting electrolyte quality about them. They're so good for healing the body. I love lemons, though.
I do too.
Deal. So that's what you're looking at. The other thing that you could try, I already mentioned a while ago, you could take a small handful of organic raisins and have them before you go to bed and see if that doesn't do the trick. I think you've heard what I've said that my mom used to do. She would say that if she ever woke up in the middle of the night and if she wanted to go right back to sleep, this was her trick. She would take a little saucer, you know, the kind that you have a tea party with your granddaughters. I'm just joking.
Yeah.
Do you have granddaughters?
I do.
Oh, well, I was just kind of guessing. I mean, that's kind of young for a woman that's 35, but I'm not going to question that. But if you take the tea saucer and she would put Celtic salt on it, just, you know, like from the salt shaker or the grinder. And she would tell me, she said, "Roy, if I ever wake up in the middle of the night and I want to go back to sleep, what I do is I usually just lick my finger with my tongue and I press it into that saucer beside my bed. And whatever salt comes off, I put that back in my mouth and suck on it, and I go right back to sleep." I'm going, really? Well, what is she doing? Those are minerals right there. And Celtic salt is amazingly rich in magnesium. And magnesium is known as the great relaxer.
Okay.
I had can I tell you something I thought was pretty cool?
Sure.
Okay, this woman comes to see me, and she's telling me that one of the things that she's into that's really, really helped her sleep and relax at night is doing what's called a gratitude journal. You ever heard of that before?
No.
And so she said it's her job to write in the journal before she goes to sleep three things that she's grateful for. So I said, okay, what'd you write down last night? She said, well, don't laugh at me. And I said, I won't, which sometimes it's a lie. I laugh at almost everything. But she said, I said I was thankful to God for my pillowcase. I said, okay, that's a good one. I said, what's the next one? She said, I said, thank you for my pillow.
My pillow?
Yeah, so she had her pillowcase, and I can't remember what else she said after that, but I just thought it was so funny. But, you know, she is right, though. I know you know this, but the human brain cannot hold two opposing thoughts equally at the same time. You can't do it.
Okay.
And so if you have gratitude, that tends to soothe the blood and the kidneys. All the organs work better when you experience gratitude. When you experience... What's the opposite of gratitude?
Non-gratitude.
You're right. It's called complaining.
Yes.
And so you can't both be complaining and be thankful at the same time. Would you kind of agree with that?
Exactly.
And so the urinary tract is one of the most interesting systems in the body. It's trying to make sure that your blood is clean and pure. And so if you have excessive urination, I'd say, okay, let's give you some alkaline ash minerals. Let's give you one salad a day. Squeeze your lemon juice or your lime juice into your water and drink it. If you want to put a little bit of grape in there to make like a weak Gatorade, I like that. Start taking alkaline ash minerals in the form of Celtic or Celtic salt. Baking soda is what some people do. I personally like cherries and raisins for trying to fix this. So that's what you can look
cherries?
At. Yeah, absolutely. Now, the usual question I get is they want to know if they can get those fried cherry pies that are under those heat lamps at the restaurants. I'm going, no. And then they want the cherries that have been dipped in chocolate.
No, not a fan of those either.
good girl.
But back on that salt, what about pink Himalaya salt?
Yeah, you could use that also. You sure could.
Okay.
Now, that's a weird deal. Can you explain to me how all that salt got up in those high Himalayan mountains? It's almost like there was a flood of salt water that covered the earth. But you don't believe that stuff, do you?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, okay.
You talk about Noah in the flood, yeah.
Oh, tell me more. Who is this Noah fellow you're talking about?
Well, yeah. Those are great, great remedies. I appreciate it so much. I knew you had something other than a pill, and I did not want to go a pill form. So,
well, good job. I'm proud of you.
You have a blessed day, sir.
You too. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
You know, your body does a really good job, and this is all God's great design. I just stand in awe of it. It tells you when something's not right. So when something changes, like increased urination, you're supposed to wake up, take notice, and say, what am I doing? Good morning. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Yes, I'm a first-time caller, so I have a question. My husband has been diagnosed with Grover's disease, and that was from a biopsy. And he's been battling this for months now with actually no relief, as you can well imagine, everything.
Well, please help me out here. What is Grover's disease? I have no knowledge of it.
Oh, gosh. Well, we had to look it up, too, of course. Nobody bothered to explain that. Apparently.
Oh, they just told you and they didn't give you any explanation to give you a heads up?
Not really. It's a rare disease, perhaps congenital. It covers the trunk of the body, very itchy. Just miserable, absolutely miserable. Keeps you awake, just gets on your last nerve. We've tried everything. They gave us all kinds of cortisone creams. He's taken two rounds of antibiotics.
Well, can you back up for me, please?
Sure.
What does it look like? Tell me what the skin on his torso looks like.
Kind of welts, and then they start small, and then it kind of starts to join up with maybe others. He has one spot. The biggest spot he has is maybe a little bit larger than a quarter on his back, kind of between his shoulders. Goes all the way to his neckline. I literally stops there all the way around his neck.
Well, where was the very first location?
Probably,
where did it start?
Yeah, I think it started on his back.
Where?
And then around the spine, shoulders.
Well, is it just right there, right between the shoulder blades, or maybe just at the bottom of the shoulder blades?
Kind of at the bottom of the shoulder blades.
See, can I just have permission to speak freely?
Please.
Believe me, we got nothing to lose here. Okay.
Yeah.
I need to go in like three or four different directions, all right? But if I can, I'll try to make them sound neat, even though I'm a man and I can't multitask like you can. So, all right, but here goes. There is an organ system in your husband's body called the liver. And one of the jobs of your liver is to keep your skin under surveillance 24/7. So when it starts right there in the middle of the back, at the bottom of the shoulder blades, that's what I think of. I think of, okay, what's going on with the liver? But the other thing that I want to tell you is anytime that somebody's itching of their skin, I'm telling you, my mind goes, what's going on with the liver? Why is it not doing its job properly? What can we do to turn it around? And so let me put that thought on hold for 1 second and let me go in a different direction, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. These red whelps that come up easily and they itch, that doesn't happen unless the immune system is releasing an excessive amount of histamine.
Okay.
And so anytime that you have redness, there's histamine. Anytime there's itching, there's too much histamine. And so that's probably the next direction I'm going to go, is your pancreas is supposed to release pancreatic enzymes or proteases that break down histamine. Mm-hmm. And guess which organ removes histamine from the body when it's in excess? That'd be the liver.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Let me go in a different direction. Just under your husband's sternum, where his collarbones or clavicles join, there's a bone called the manubrium. Directly mm-hmm. beneath the manubrium or the sternum, you have this double-lobed long gland called the thymus gland.
Okay.
Can I just tell you that when the thymus does not work right, that's when you get all these whelps on the skin.
Huh.
And so the thymus gland is absolutely the largest gland of the immune system, hands down. I know there's more clues that you could probably give me about your husband, but there's got to be something that we can do to tap into. How can we get all this horrible misery to go away? Because he's probably starting to feel like he's Job at this point.
Yes.
So I'm going to put the idea of Grover's disease on hold. And sorry, I'm horrible, but you know who I thought of when you said Grover?
No.
I thought of the Sesame Street character called Grover. I don't know why he popped in my head, but he's there now. It's your fault. But what I want to do is I want to focus on what can we do. This is not one of those situations where we want to watch and wait, because if we do, we got a beautiful man that's just going to suffer, and he's going to be miserable.
Miserable, yes.
And so I'm telling you right now, his blood work, he's got all the clues that we need if you know how to read it.
Okay.
I guarantee you it ain't coming back 100% perfect. There's going to be some things that are low and some things that are high. Is that true?
Okay. That's right. And he just had blood work drawn yesterday for next Tuesday to be talked about.
Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to ask a bunch of questions here. Okay. You don't by chance have the blood work right in front of you, do you?
No, because there's no results yet.
Okay, gotcha. They're coming next week, though, right?
We hope, yes, yes.
Well, when you see one of those blood levels that are really high, ask, what is the significance of that? Why is it that way? Is there anything that we can do? And if he says watch and wait, I'm going to pound my fist. Do you hear that?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Doesn't do it looking good, does it?
No.
Okay, so what we want to do is, what can we do to help him heal and get well? I'm just going to kind of break it down for you, just because we have a little bit of time left. If he is consuming anything with an artificial sugar in it, that could be Splenda, saccharin, NutraSweet, aspartame, acesulfame K, you just keep going down the list. That is the purest garbage on the face of the earth. There's no way to have health. Does he consume diet beverages?
No, this man is a health nut, basically.
I like him already.
The right stuff, I guarantee you. No sugar. He doesn't do sugar.
Well, is he around chemicals at all?
No. He's retired.
Well, what do you do for a living?
Basically inspecting. He's a health inspector sort of person.
But he hasn't been around a lot of toxic chemicals.
No,
like he doesn't
not
spray.
All,
he doesn't
no.
spray Roundup around the fences.
No.
Okay, but there's got to be something that's a clue. And what is his best guess right now? Is what's behind all this?
You know, he's had allergies in the past.
Okay, now bingo, we're in business.
Okay, yeah. He took shots for a few years. They seem to help, about 5 years. And they seem to help, and I can't remember why he quit, because he got tired of it, most likely.
Does he have all the organs that God gave him?
He does.
Even his tonsils and his appendix?
Well, no, tonsils are gone.
Okay.
Appendix are good. He's had a hernia surgery in the last 3 years.
Okay, well, there's got to be a way that we can piece this together, but the tonsils are a pretty big deal.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, how many rounds of antibiotics has he had in his lifetime?
Probably less than most folks, but yes, he's
good.
Had some. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think just everybody that I've ever met has had one or two, but there's some people that probably have hundreds of rounds.
No, he's not excessive with that. In fact, he's been known to be given them and just put them on the counter.
Okay, I wonder what would happen with your husband if we did just a three-day fast.
A three-day fast,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so if you took a gallon of water and you took 12 ounces of frozen grape juice, Concord concentrate from the frozen food section, stirred it up with a teaspoon of salt and maybe the juice of 1 to 2 lemons, What if he just sipped on that throughout each and every day and just gave his immune system, his body a rest?
Okay.
Because what happens is when you don't eat food, your body says, okay, evidently you want us to clean house here and you want us to heal. And the answer is yes. So he's not taking any over-the-counter or prescription drugs whatsoever, right?
Right now he is taking something. It's called Doxepin. They just gave it to him. And I know that, like he says, that's just to make me forget I itch, and it's not working.
Oh, dear. Bless his heart. Well, the itching is there for a reason. Now, this is the hard part right here.
Okay.
Everything that he's going through, it has a very specific reason. Disease has a great precision. It doesn't happen for no reason. Mm-hmm. Now, the hard part is getting a doctor to put his brain and pen to the paper and say, okay, let's figure this out. The buck stops here.
Right.
I guarantee you, the doctor, if the doctor had this, you think he'd be motivated?
No,
oh my goodness.
Absolutely, yes.
He would say, we're going to have to figure this out. But what I would look at, I'd let him fast for 3 days and maybe giving him a plant called stinging nettle, or nettle, N-E-T-T-L-E.
Uh-huh.
So that might be the sort of thing that you might be looking at doing to trying to help your husband. But he's got nothing to lose at all by just fasting for 3 days to see if there's improvement.
Yeah. No, this is getting real old real quick.
And
can't
so,
sleep.
No, yeah, you're right. I agree with you. It's getting old quick.
So, I mean, I wake up this morning and the way he's in here, he's trying to put this calamine all over. I mean, that seems to give some relief. He's tried everything.
Well, you might put him in a bathtub, and in the bathtub, just put a cup of olive oil in there. Yeah, it's going to turn everything green. And then just take about 10 bags of chamomile tea and make a big heavy tea and just pour in the bathtub and let him just soak. Put some Epsom salt in there. See what happens.
Mm-hmm,
you got nothing to lose.
No.
Actually, what you should do is the moment he comes out of I can tell you what I would do. I just don't want to say it on the radio. It begins with the letter U. But I'm going to say it a different way. When a brand new baby is growing in his mama's womb or her mama's womb, she is completely bathed by a substance called amniotic fluid. You've heard of that, haven't you?
Oh, sure.
You want me to tell you what that stuff's made out of?
What?
Urine.
Okay.
I didn't say anything directly, but I did tell you indirectly what to do.
Yeah, and I was suspicious of that.
No, well, don't be. It's the greatest healing remedy of all time.
No, I mean, I thought maybe that's what you were going to say.
Oh, you figured it out?
Yeah.
Oh, but, you know, I was hoping maybe. I could be more clever and tricky, but I couldn't do it today.
Oh, but that's okay.
And the thing of it is, you could do a test.
Uh-huh.
You could apply it to the worst part every 15 minutes and see if it goes away.
Hmm.
See if the itching goes away.
Wow.
Now, whatever you do, don't repeat this conversation. I am not recording this program today, so nobody will know your secrets.
Yeah.
Now, I need your full name so we can... I'm joking. Don't.
You're funny, too.
Yeah, that ain't too funny. Okay. Well, unfortunately, we're all out of time, but I'm telling you right now, I am rooting for your husband. I'll do whatever I can to help him.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Grover's disease. Good. Have a great day.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye.